consciousness. And so Gail asked me this really inverse question, saying that if all of a sudden I woke up out of a coma and this current reality that we are in was actually the fabricated in your mind reality of within the coma, what would have been the sign that would tell you that this so-called reality was false? And I had to think about it for a while. And then I said, it's the world situation in which we're in right now, where all of the facts, all of the reason that should tell us to do things almost 180 degrees polar opposite to what we've been doing, and we ignore it.
I get
this
that.
This reality
yeah.
is surreal. What is going on is absolutely surreal.
Yeah, it's not reality anymore. It is surreality, and that's why the French invented the phrase, I think.
In my show, which we're going to be heading to here in just a minute, my track of the day is actually in response to some of the crap from that assbag, Lieberman, is why I've chosen it. And he's a perfect example of what I find to be surreal about this world.
Well, yeah, I don't know which comments you're talking about, and I'll get out of the way here in a second, but yeah, when I saw him say that Iraqis who want us the hell out of their country, when he responded to that by saying, well, you know, they don't have a vote in our election. But the thing you have to understand yeah. about Joseph Lieberman is that Joseph I. Lieberman is a bigot and a racist, okay? He's never met an Arab he didn't think needed to die.
Absolutely, absolutely. And he's a traitor. He's a backstabber. You know, he's hard to even describe as a human being because he is a racist. But again, in this situation, you label him a racist, and you're going to end up with that lobby come down on your head calling you an anti-Semite.
Ain't it fun being broke? You know what I mean? We've got just that much freedom here at the Horn, John. We can actually talk facts and talk truth.
Yeah, because if there was money to get out of us, I reckon we would have been targeted already.
Yeah, sure. Maybe it's why we have to stumble along, and I have to sweat when the Gmail bill comes in, and or the Google Ads bill, or this bill or that bill. And we just kind of have to sweat it and, hope that we can make it another month.
Yeah, and wait for when the tide changes a bit and then be fully funded, when reality plays a little bit more a part in what we have to deal with. Because this is so not what reality should be. It's disturbing. And Joe Lieberman is like the signpost for, danger ahead, nut job brigade.
Yeah. Eesh.
Yeah.
But I'll get out of the way because it sounds like you've got a whale of a show coming along. If you can just stay connected. You want to work this out in advance? What do I do if you're talking along and you just disappear? Shall I assume that you've been gotten or that you'll be back?
Since it seems to be killing the phone as opposed to the whole net, hang tight. We'll communicate. Run some music, and we'll see if we can get back on.
Okay, let me go find that wonderful drum solo. That always works well. Drum trip and ecstasy. Yeah, that
yep.
one.
Oh yeah, Rusted Root. Yeah, I almost thought about pulling a Rusted Root track again today, but this just applies so much more that I've actually got two lined up because one kind of feeds into the other. So we'll see you on the other side, man.
All right. Later, man. Thanks a lot. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
Don't You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on The Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. Or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Tuesday night, or Wednesday morning, or Wednesday afternoon, wherever it is that you reside on this beautiful blue marble, such that it is. Sorry about missing out on last night, but, you know, it was, there were plumbing problems in the house, had to deal with that, but all is well. And speaking of flushing, someone that I'd like to just flush would be Joe Lieberman. Now, I got up this morning, and I'm waiting for the plumber, and I'm surfing around. I go over to Cooks and Liars, and they had two posts in succession on Lieberman. And I just think this guy is about as low as you can get. And, you know, for a guy that was once a Democrat, then calls himself an independent while he sucks up to the Republicans, is just an absolute. This guy just shits me to tears. Really does. He really does. So, I've got two tracks today. One you've heard on this program before, and another one I don't think I've played before, but they apply to this. Now, I don't know if you've seen over at Crooks and Liars, and I'm sorry, it was a bit busy this morning. I didn't have a chance to send stuff off to ELO to post for me today, but you can find it at Crooks and Liars. You got to go back a little bit. But it's a post. The post is called Living a Republican War, the Lieberman version. And this is one of these rare moments where someone from the for-profit media actually brought up something, you know, solid, constructive, and a point. And Kyra Phillips, they say here, brought up an interesting point for the good senator from the Nutmeg State today on American Morning, namely that even the Iraqi soldiers don't want us there any longer. Lieberman replies, with all the grace and aplomb we've come to expect from the man, that it's a good thing they don't have a vote in our election. So Phillips says, all right, let's step aside from the polls and talk subject matter. Obviously, the Iraq War. He continues to embrace that. This is high on the agenda for the American people. I just returned from Baghdad, and what was interesting to me is I sat down with dozens of Iraqi soldiers and dozens of students at Baghdad University, and Senator, they said to me, we don't want to see a Republican president. As a matter of fact, out of every single one that I talked, not one person said they supported John McCain. They said they're living a Republican war. Look at this. It's a disaster. We want to see a Democrat for president. What does John McCain say to the future of Iraq? And we're talking about Iraqi soldiers and Baghdad University students. They're the ones living this. And Lieberman says, well, I'm really surprised to hear that. And Phillips says, I was too. It's very interesting. They were very blunt and very straightforward. And Lieberman comes back, and I mean, this is just so surreal. This is classic Lieberman. Yes, not that I expected the Iraqis to vote in our election, but I will tell you that in all of the visits I've made there, and it's eight, the Iraqi people on the street, the Iraqi military, the Iraqi government that I've talked to, and don't want us to just pick up and leave. Those that he's talked to. I reckon, you know, every time he goes over there, you know, it's all very well vetted. It's all American kiss-ups. It's all people that are part of the American command and control, And as I'm watching this video and reading this transcript, screaming into the jukebox that is my brain, comes screaming out a track called Get Out from Faith No More. Now, this is from what is still surprisingly to me my favorite Faith No More record. It's from an album called King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime. And the reason why I'm always surprised that this album is my favorite is it was just before they broke up, and Jim Martin, the guitar player, decided to split. So to finish the record, they go and hire a studio guitar player. And the guitar work on this album is just outstanding. It's unbelievable. And it goes everything from kind of like R&B comping to the heaviest detuned kind of metal thing you could imagine. And so just kind of the opening section of this is what I, if Iraq were in America, what the hell kind of statement was that? This is the song that people will be marching in the streets screaming at the American power base to get the hell out of here. So, without further ado, and then I got another one from the same album, but it all kind of just fits into my whole vibe of Lieberman being the lying sack of shit that he is, and the concept of the Hundred Years of War in Iraq, which is what assholes like him, like John McCain, think is a good idea. So, from King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime, Faith No More, and Get Out. Roll it, Bob. And I reckon Mike Patton has got to be one of the most amazing hard rock singers ever. Just the range of sounds that the guy can produce just blows me away. Now, that I played you that song to play you this one, which I've played before, and the vibe of this song just fits the Republican war machine, assholes like Joe Lieberman, who take great pleasure in pissing people off, who take great pleasure in angering their enemies or creating enemies that they didn't have to begin with. So, I couldn't play Get Out without playing this one, because I think it applies as well. And this is just my... that, you know, this all just so applies. So, from the same record, King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime, Faith No More, and The Gentle Art of Making Enemies. Roll it, Bob. I get such pleasure out of that record. It's one of those, for me, it's one of those cleansing albums. You know, I'm I just get, you know, fed up and pissed off. I can't seem to do anything about this crap that goes on in the world. It's one of those albums that I just turn on, turn the damn thing up to 11, and scream myself hoarse. And although I can't speak afterwards, I feel a hell of a lot better afterwards. Ha! Okay. screw you, Joe. And all that. He's such a scumbag. Because the other post that they had at Crooks and Liars, which is just below the other one, continues to push the Hamas smear. And anyone who's been following this, you know, the leaders of Hamas have said they'd like to see Barack Obama become president, probably because they think that maybe possibly Barack Obama might give Palestine a fair shake. And but yet, in opposite world of the Republicans and Joey Lieberman, that seems to be mean that because Hamas said that means that Barack Obama sides with Hamas. Huh? Pardon me? What kind of ass-backwards logic allows you to even say this kind of crap? You know, it just absolutely just does my head in. I know I use that term, that little turn of phrase way too much, but it just does. You know, it just does. Okay, I've had my rant on the turncoat Joe Lieberman. Time to move on to other things. Now, I had this for yesterday before I had to pull the plug on the show. Night before last on the ABC's Late Line, Tony Jones, and I've played audio of Tony Jones doing interviews before, and I usually get responses to the effect of, wow, you have real journalists down there. You have journalists that actually can conduct an interview. And yes, we do. And Tony Jones is probably one of the best that this country has to offer. And the other night, he had author Richard Hineberg on, and he's an expert on peak oil. And he had some very interesting things to say when discussing the speculation that we'll see $200 a barrel oil by the end of 2008, beginning of 2009, all that kind of thing. Now, I would have loved to have pulled the audio for this, but I just didn't have time. So you'll have to deal with me reading from the transcript today. Tony Jones says, now let's start with the recent oil price prediction. Goldman Sachs is saying within 2 years oil could reach $200 a barrel. Other analysts have a different view and say it could go down back to $40 a barrel. Where do you sit on this? What do you think is going to happen? And Hineberg says, I think the price could lose some ground temporarily. Probably around election time. That's my additional comment. But over the long term, there's nowhere for oil prices to go but up. And we could, in fact, see prices considerably above $200 a barrel within the next 2 or 3 years. Tony Jones asks, what does this mean for governments like Australia? We're just about to have our budget released in this country. The federal and new Labor government came to power promising to try and do something about rising food prices in supermarkets and rising oil prices. Sounds like their hands are going to be tied for the foreseeable future. Hineberg, yes, I think that's true. I don't think there's anything that the Australian government can do or the U.S. government can do about rising oil and food prices. By the way, these two things are connected. The rising prices create increased costs for farmers. Also, the cost of shipping food and just about everything else is increasing. So the high prices are going to have a knock-on effect through the economy, the airline industry, blah, 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 blah. A little further down, Tony says, I'll come in a moment to how governments could do that. But in the meantime, we had only last week the Nobel Prize-winning economist Joe Stiglitz on the program. He actually blames the Iraq War for the trigger that led to oil prices to start spiraling. Do you agree with him? Heidenberg, well, I thought the U.S. invasion of Iraq was a terrible idea at the time and still feel that way. So if I thought that somehow the high oil prices could be blamed on that, I'd be happy to do so. I think he may be right that there were some minor trigger effects there, but really the situation we're seeing now mostly has to do with the fundamentals of supply and demand. We have more countries every year in the category of oil importing nations and fewer countries every year that are able to export oil. That's the nub of the issue. Jones then says, including former oil-producing countries like Indonesia, for example. Heinberg, and like Great Britain and Norway, Great Britain has now become a net oil-importing country again after 30 years as an exporter. He also goes, later on, as they get into the whole peak oil thing, Tony Jones says here, the oil industry has consistently revised oil reserves upwards over a period of time. It is estimated there's more than a trillion barrels left underground just from known reserves at the moment, which would last for a considerable amount of time, obviously. Heidenberg, well, yes. If we could use these reserves at an arbitrary rate, the problem is oil is getting harder and harder to get out of the ground. We've used the cheap, easy stuff. We've used the oil we could get from Texas and Oklahoma and even the North Sea, and now what we're finding are oil fields in ultra-deep water and places that are extremely difficult to access from a technical standpoint. We're also starting to get more from places like the Canadian tar sands, where there's an enormous amount of resource in place, but it's not as liquid oil. It's the stuff that has to be converted into synthetic fuel using enormous amounts of water and natural gas. Very resource-intensive and environmentally ruinous process. So the easy glory days of the oil industry are over, and just about everybody in the industry would agree with that statement. See, this guy's really getting into some cold, hard reality, right? This is cold, hard reality of where we are in this world. And what's gonna change it? And I have to say, he's fairly blunt that unless the entire world wakes up tomorrow and says, we have to do something about this. We need to get off the oil standard. We need to get off a carbon-based economy. Nothing any individual nation does when it comes to climate change and other things is going to have a real effect, which is incredibly depressing. It's incredibly depressing. Because there's so many people out there trying so hard to change the way that we run our society. And I mean, all this stuff is intertwined. The longer we stay dependent on this stuff that we pull out of the ground, which is finite and running out, the more everything is going to continue to cost more. And when it comes to the food issue, you know, it gets very complicated, the competition between crops for fuel and crops for food. There is fuel for mechanized farming, fuel for transport. You know, we've got this global system where everything has been so delocalized that virtually everything we get comes from somewhere far, 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 far away. And until such time that we really, really wake up. And I don't see that time coming when we have, you know, basically corporate oil barons running the largest war machine on the planet. The chances of doing anything, you know, and the United States, being that it is the largest war machine, you know, the United States still spends way more on defense than the entire rest of the world combined. To me, that screams of paranoia, and or it screams of empire. Which is what, you know, the United States, anyone looking from the outside, and for very many people looking from the inside, the United States has become an empire. And it's an empire whose system is completely tied into the petrol dollar. Our currency, the United States currency, is tied into the oil trade. You know, this is one of Nixon's great moves. Ah, screw this gold thing. Let's tie it into that black gold stuff. Now, that worked really well for a while. When oil was cheap, and they supported a strong dollar, supplies were still somewhat abundant. But now, unlike gold, which is a rare commodity, we don't burn gold to get its value out of it. However, crude oil, we burn most of it. And so it just goes bye-bye. So its value is gone. You've just, you know, it's just like pulling a $100 note out of your wallet and setting it alight. Basically, every time any of you folks have to go and fill up your cars at $4 a gallon, it's basically take a $50 bill or more, pull out your cigarette lighter, and just torch the thing. Because you've basically done the same thing. And so as we can continue to consume at the rate that we consume, we're destroying our own economy. Does this make sense? Or, you know, or am I just like adding way too many things up to get five? I really wish I had pulled the audio from this, because I really sometimes hate reading other people's words. But later on, Tony Jones gets into, he says, what do you think it would take for this to become top of the agenda? For example, in a new White House in Western governments around the world, and indeed in the booming economies of China and India, what would it take to move that idea to center stage, which he's talking about actually the idea of peak oil itself and the fact that we're maxing out our ability to pull it out of the ground any faster. And he says, well, obviously it would take some political courage, something that we lack. Policymakers would have to understand once and for all that oil prices are not going down. They're only going to go higher. So the only thing we can do at this point is to adapt to this new era that we're in of rapid depletion. That means that if we're going to save our economies, we have to undo our vulnerability to oil scarcity and higher prices, and the only way to do that is to reduce our consumption. Sweden has already taken this step. The Swedes have made it a target to become oil-dependent or oil-independent by 2020, and there are a number of cities in North America that have made a similar kind of commitment. Portland, Oregon, Oakland, California, and a number of others have established oil vulnerability task task forces and are looking at ways to reducing their city oil consumption quite dramatically over the next few years. Now, this kind of proposal is yet to make it to the halls of Congress and the U.S. Or to Parliament in Australia, but I think it's important that the idea be brought forward as soon as possible, because the sooner we start reducing nationally our oil consumption, the sooner we can stabilize prices and begin to adapt to the world that we're moving into. So this isn't a choice. We don't have a choice about moving into this new world. We need to get there as fast as we possibly can for our own well-being. So Tony Jones comes back and says, "You raise the specter of oil wars and future conflict over oil. What do you mean exactly? Where do you see that arising?" Heidenberg: "Well, what we're seeing is not just a likely decline in total oil production, but especially a decline in available oil exports. Because as I mentioned earlier, the oil exporting countries are seeing such rapidly increasing domestic demand. So the amount available on the global export market could decline by up to half just within the next 10 to 15 years. That's going to put enormous pressure on major oil importing countries like the United States and China. The U.S. is the world's foremost oil importer. China is the world's second foremost oil importing country. Africa and the Middle East, and it's, these two countries are going to head-to-head for access to supplies in Central Asia, Africa, and the Middle East, and it's difficult to envision a situation in which that competition would not become very, very intense." So Tony Jones: "Not so long ago, there were some senior neoconservative thinkers in Washington who were actually advocating the United States taking over Saudi Arabian oil fields. The implications of that are extraordinary, of course. Could you imagine ever reaching the point where that became seriously part of the administration's agenda?" Heinberg: "Absolutely yes. If there were to be a revolution in Saudi Arabia and the country were to be taken over by any political party or group that was not friendly to America's interests, then I think it's very likely that the U.S. would invade." And I reckon he's right. I reckon he's spot on. You know, the Saudis are Bush's buddies at the moment because he's able to go and kiss ass up to them, hold hands with, you know, the royal family, you know, his buddy Bandar Bush, Bandar Al-Sahid, I believe his name is. But, you know, the moment that that dictatorial, sick kingdom were actually taken down and replaced by folks who weren't quite so friendly to the U.S. government, there would be no hesitation on the part of especially a right-wing American government to go in and say, "Yep, you're not our friends anymore, time to bomb your ass. And damn, we shouldn't have sold you all those arms all these years, because now you have all kinds of really good stuff to fight us with. Well, at least we made a buck off of it. At least we made a buck." Ah! If you were listening to the horn section, I mentioned how Gail hit me with a hypothetical last night as we're going off to sleep. And I'll repeat this for those that weren't listening to the horn section. We've been listening on BBC Radio 7. They've been replaying a great reading of a book called The Coma. And this book tells the story of a guy who gets beaten on a subway and then wakes up. But after he wakes up, he suddenly realizes that he's awakened actually to being in a coma. And the story is all about his realization that this place and reality that he was in was not actually reality, and his journey back to trying to come to consciousness. So Gail asked me last night, "If suddenly tomorrow morning I woke up from a coma and that all of this that we're dealing with now, the war in Iraq, peak oil, racist, uneducated, religious freaks from the South taking over politics in America, 2 + 2 = 5 because my God told me so, crap that we're hearing happen in the United States in schools. I sat there thinking, this is what would tell me that this couldn't be real. It's too insane to be real. It lacks logic and sense. So that if I woke up tomorrow suddenly coming to the realization that all of this, since, you know, for the last 8 years, has all been a construct of my subconscious and my imagination, that would make more sense to me than this being reality. Because I cannot believe how ignorant and just leadable people can be. I thought we were more enlightened than this. And I think we were. But the religion industry saw the threat and the fact that people were starting to get a clue that organized churches should be more about tradition than fact and belief. And I'd be able to instantly accept if I suddenly awakened that all of this was not real. You know, Bob and I talking about, what is it, 1 in 5 voters or whatever it was in West Virginia, you know, voted for Hillary Clinton because she was white or because his mama was an atheist? This is what a dumbed-down society accepts. And I know that this is harsh, and it's nasty, and it's ugly, and I'm being mean, but I make no apology. I want, you know, I don't have a college education. But I like to read, I like to research. And I seem to be able to make informed decisions. And I kind of expect in this modern era of instant information, how amazing that it is that we can still have ass-backwards people in America still think that Barack Obama is a Muslim, even though that shouldn't matter. Separation of church and state, damn it. The man's religious beliefs should have nothing to do with it. And in fact, when someone is one of these born-agains and God speaks through me, should be out. Anyone doing that should be out of the race immediately for being insane. If I said that little white bearded men talk to me, they'd be sent in the van with the white truck and the white jacket with the funky sleeves that hook up from behind. But no, you can't question these people because then suddenly you're hateful. Or you don't respect family values. Well, if in your family your sister is also your child's mother, that's not my kind of family values. And I really... It's amazing I mean, is this what happens when you slowly whittle away at the wonderful education system that we used to have in the United States? I mean, being a high school student in the 80s during the Reagan Revolution, I watched the public education system slowly being dismantled. It was when we first started having that teach to the test kind of stuff going on. Oh, we don't need to spend money on these, you know, music and arts programs because they're not training someone for an office job. Even though, I mean, when it comes to this stuff, I get just so irate, because every study has shown, every single study that has ever been done on these kind of things has shown, one year of music tuition ends up raising science, math, and reading comprehension scores by up to 25%. Because music education and arts education actually start exercising parts of the brain that rote learning can never do. So by some bean counter asshole sitting there thinking, oh, well, we don't need to have this there band, and we don't need to have this there jazz class, and we don't need to have this there marching band, unless they're playing, you know, the Star Spangled Banner, we can save all kinds of money. But what has that cost us 20 plus years down the road? We have many, many, many young adults who have never been taught to actually think. They only regurgitate. So if you train kids in a school system to just regurgitate, it's real easy for the preacher man to get up there and talk about Barack Hussein Obama, the Muslim, who supports Hamas, and just because that asshole on the pulpit says it, you got a whole section of the American populace going, uh-huh. Have you checked on that? No, but my preacher told me so. And sometimes I feel bad, only for a short moment, about bagging on these preachers, because, you know, throughout my life, you know, I've had contact with a few. And individually, I've met some that are really good people and try and work in their communities. But they still represent an organization and a concept that tells people not to think or question. You know, I remember when people who were still considered, you know, good Christian folk used to say things like, never question your faith, but always question your religion. And that always made sense to me. But you say something like that now, you'll be looked at and said, no, you can't question your religion. ELO. Mentioning Thomas Friedman's book, The World is Flat. You know, this is what, you know, I'm like seriously waiting for, you know, in some of these states, like, you know, what was it, Kansas and Kentucky or somewhere else, that, you know, putting these laws in about, you know, if my religion said something's true, even if it's wrong, you can't mark me wrong kind of crap. How long is it going to take at this rate before we're going to have a bunch of people thinking that the world is flat and that the sun revolves around us? Even though it's pretty obvious that that's not the case. You know, have they ever flown around the world? Oh, no, probably not, because these are the same people that say, I don't need to go over to Europe. I can go to Vegas and be in the same thing. They got a little France down there. It's just like France. And you know this how? Well, because I was told so. That's what the brochure said. Oh, my God. ELO's, okay. ELO in the chat room says, that the superintendent, this is a true story. This is a true story. That a superintendent of a school, after reading Friedman's book, The World is Flat, recommended it to everyone else reading it. The guy's name was Jim Jones. Oh, my God. Oh, and of course, the juggernaut pops in there and says, you know, they already exist. Check out the International Flat Earth Society. I mean, even without all this, you know, other craziness that goes on, I could believe that there was a Flat Earth Society. There's always going to be a society for everything kind of odd. I mean, you know, like people with similar delusions will find one another. Especially in the age of the internet. They probably are all connected via Facebook. And when they're told that Facebook security is shithouse and all the personal details can be gotten at, they'll say, nah, my God will protect my data because I'm a godly internet user. Jesus is my firewall, damn it! You know, I sit back from way over here and just feel for all of my friends back in America, even if they're on the other side of the debate from me. Because it's really, really got to be depressing to live in a nation with so much power and so little introspection and so little logic and thinking. You know, it was a lack of thinking that got everyone going, yep, into Iraq! We're going into Iraq! But actually been given all the facts and actually had a debate, we wouldn't be where we are. Before we run out of time, I got to mention this little thing. Our new Labor government put out their first federal budget yesterday, the first federal budget by a Labor government in 13 years. And I would not want the treasurer's job for any amount of money. Because this guy had to come up with a budget that was going to have some pain for everybody. Because we have an inflation problem that's kicked in here. And part of it's kind of, it has to do with the previous government living off of the resources boom and actually not investing anything. You know, nothing in roads, nothing in hospitals, nothing in other infrastructures. So this guy had to come up with a budget that, first of all, tried to cut spending. Cut fat, like, you know, one of the last things that Howard slipped in as an extra bit of vote buying was the Fishing Hall of Fame. That's been cut. $150 million for the Fishing Hall of Fame. But Wayne Swan released a budget last night that probably could have cut harder than it did. However, I think he and Lindsay Tanner, who I think probably had more to do with the budget coming up with it, and as they're known as the Razor Gang, it does come down as a bit of a Robin Hood budget. They've made changes where, you know, during the Howard years, things like family assistance was not means tested. So a millionaire could get the same $5,000 that someone making less than 50 grand would get. So they're means testing it. You know, if you have the money, you don't need the help. So there's a bit of a Robin Hood thing going on here. And I think he's done well. But as the treasurer was giving his budget speech last night, it's a prime time event. I mean, one of the things that I love about living in a smaller country, the actual workings of politics tend to get more spotlight. And the ABC broadcast the speech and the delivery of the budget live, which is great. And all the opposition could do, all the old Howard huggers, all they could do was sit there and giggle and taunt from the other side like a bunch of bratty little school children that still have not gotten used to the concept that they are no longer the government. And it has to be one of the funniest damn things I have ever watched. And they just cannot get their shit together and not look like a bunch of spoiled brat little children on a playground. Now, they need to get it together, because I want them to be a viable opposition to keep this Labor government in check. But so far, I'm seeing something that I haven't seen in a long, long time, which is actually, you know, no one likes a handout. But handouts should go to those who need it, and not to those who don't need it. And that's what we're seeing. Because I guarantee you, any person who has ever been on welfare of any kind is happy when they no longer need that welfare. Reagan came up with the myth of the welfare moms. We have the dull-bludging surfers. Dull-bludging surfers are the ones that are ruining the Australian economy as far as the right wing is concerned. It's just like, you know, for how many of them there might be, it's a drop in the bucket. It's just absolute, just, you know, they're, like I said, they just come off as bratty little kids on the playground who, you know, when they can't win on the basis of fact, they just turn around and go, "Your mama." And that's what all sounded like from the other side of the aisle during the speech last night, was just heckle, 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 neener, neener, neener. We're going to try and make you look bad on TV. We're going to try and break you. We're going to try and make you break your concentration and look silly on TV because we have nothing else. And now they have the fun job of selling it. But our budget surplus, which was a record this time around, isn't going to just be given back in tax cuts. It's actually going to be invested in infrastructure. What a concept! What a concept! Infrastructure, roads, rail, hospitals, broadband infrastructure. Come on, bring it on. Unbelievable. But as I look here, looks like we're coming up on the end of things there, Bob. So thanks for being with us today as we wrap up another broadcasting day on the Head On Radio Network. And thanks for sitting through my little rant fest and metal fest and Joe Lieberman, you're a fucking asshole fest. Thanks to Bob for producing. Thanks to Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for the streaming and the archives. Thanks to Scott.